I'm Joanna Shanks.
I'm Emma Taylor.
And this is Murder, She Spoke. Dance to the intro music. I love how it's just our new kind of thing that we do.
I can hear it in my head.
I know.
I can hear it.
Do you know what? This might sound like a... Well, not really a giant pat on the back for me because it was you that chose it, but I still love our intro music. Mm. It's never got old.
It's definitely is pretty good. Although I have to say it is pretty cool when you get people like My Favourite Murder who actually like write and sing there as well. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and ours is just like bot.
No one wants to hear us sing it though. I think it's probably for the best.
Especially not me. Yeah, especially not me. Chat this week. Actually, Emma, we've had some reviews, which we have been a little bit behind, been a little bit lazy and checking things. So I do apologise that some of these are a little bit older. We've just missed them. We did actually have some reviews left on our Facebook page, which I don't think either of us got a notification for. We just kind of stumbled across them, didn't we?
Yeah, I only got a notification for the last one. So we are very sorry. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for recommending us and reviewing us.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got Colleen Rowley left us a lovely review. Moira Montgomery Cook, she also left us a lovely review in September. She particularly enjoyed the Corey McCaig episode. Mm. She felt that was food for thought. And I also recommend anyone who's not listened to the Corey McCaig episode, I would absolutely go and listen to it because it was a really strange case. That one was researched for us by our lovely friend Fern from Evidence of a Crime. And Helen Angel, who just left us a review just a few days ago, she said that she really enjoys listening, great content, and she loves the banter. And she enjoys our recommendations too, which is really nice. We also had another review a while ago, I think, left on Podbean, one of the listeners. Unfortunately, I'm not sure what the name is. Numbdyad.
I thought maybe Numbdyad, maybe like with extra letter.
Numbdyad. Something like
they'll know
not
what
totally
it is.
Sure.
They'll know what
apologize.
It is.
It was 3 months ago, so apologize again for the late shout out.
Well, normally it's only my mum that leaves comments on Podbean.
Yes,
so
your lovely mum.
And she also tells me them in like on the phone, so I don't necessarily always check the Podbean because I'll get her feedback anyway.
Mammy Laurie.
So I'm so sorry. So I always forget that other people actually listen to us as well.
Yeah, do you know what? And it's probably a good time to say thank you very much to Emma's mum for always leaving us lovely reviews. You're incredibly sweet and we do appreciate it. I think you're probably one of the only family members that listens to our podcast. and you are our true number one fan as well. And we absolutely appreciate you. The review was left 3 months ago by Numbdyad or something like that. Sorry. And she's talking about...
They? You don't know who they are.
Sorry, they. They are talking about... a case that you covered, Emma. It was the case of
Emma Faulds,
and she commented that she was looking forward to hearing all about CrimeCon too, which hopefully she did continue listening and caught up on our news from CrimeCon as well. And then just earlier this month we also had another review from Podlife84 saying that she discovered our podcast recently. She loves the chat and the mix of the cases that are covered. Length of the episodes are perfect, which helps make listening really easy and enjoyable, which is great. Your feedback is always, always valuable to us. We do pay attention to what you say. You'll probably remember if you've been a listener from the beginning or if you have gone back and listened to our older episodes that we have made. We did make some changes, particularly based on feedback that we had in the beginning. And we always want to know what's good and what's not. If there's something that you think we could do better, then please do let us know. Another appeal I'm just going to say now, because I know that not everybody will listen right to the end of the episode, you know, I do appreciate that some people might just switch off after we've covered the case, and that's fine. So at the moment, I just want to say, if you do have a funny true crime related story, fact, tidbit, something that you'd actually like us to read out on the podcast at the end after we've covered the case, we would be delighted to do so. Please write in. You can email us info@murdershespoke.net with anything that you want us to read out. We are happy if you'd like to remain anonymous or use false names. That's absolutely fine. But yeah, it would be really good if we could use some listener stories at the end of the episodes. That would be a really nice thing for us to be able to do. So please do get in contact. As before, you can contact us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter as well if you don't want to email us.
Just before we continue, I actually do have another little bit of news. Don't know if any of our listeners will be aware of it already, but if you've listened from the start, what episode is it, Joanna?
Episode 9, I covered the case of Caroline Glachan.
Yeah, so there has been an update in the Caroline Glachan case, and three people have been charged and will appear in court with being charged with her murder. So fantastic. There are two men. There's Robert O'Brien, who's 43, Andrew Kelly, who's 42, and Donna Brand, who's 42. So at the time, I think I worked this out, they would have been like 17, 18 years old, and she would have been about 14. They haven't made a plea or a declaration, and they have been remanded in custody, and they're due to return to court, I believe it's this week sometime. So that's the week beginning the 29th of November as we're recording. So you can maybe keep an eye on the news. We're going to be keeping an eye on it. But I just wanted to give everyone a little update. Can you just briefly remind us of the details of the case, just in case anyone needs a little reminder?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you haven't listened to episode 9, please do consider going back and listen to it. Caroline Glachan, she lived with her mum, and she was 14 years old, and she had a sleepover with her friend. She left, obviously, spoilers if you haven't listened to it, maybe skip ahead here if you do want to go and listen to it and you don't want to spoil her. But she had a sleepover with her friend. Her, I think her mum was working that night, and she decided to go meet up with her boyfriend. She walked along a short distance from where she was staying. I think actually her friends and her were maybe outside the shops, chippy, things like that. She left to go meet her boyfriend, I think around about midnight, something around that. I can't remember the exact details, but she crossed a bridge and sort of into like a...
It was like a path between two neighbourhoods, wasn't it? It was at Bon Hill.
Yeah.
And yes. She was walking from kind of one estate of houses and things to another.
Yes, along, sort of alongside a river. So it's probably a bit overgrown and a bit kind of isolated. And basically she was found dead the next day. The next day being her mum's 40th birthday as well. Yeah. Caroline was an only child, and her mum was absolutely devastated by her murder. It was unsolved. So for years, I think the incident occurred in, was it 1996, Emma?
Yes, that's right.
So yeah, a significant amount of time passed, and there was no one had been charged with her murder. And there's now just been a development in the case, as Emma has told you there. So fingers crossed that it leads to a successful outcome and the solving of this very long overdue case. Emma, what is your case this week? I am interested to hear what you've got for us.
Okay, the case that I've got is that of Louise Tiffany. I believe I may have mentioned her name in passing to you before, but I don't know if you know any of the details, so...
I do.
You do. Okay, that's fine.
I had actually. She is on my list.
Oh, is she? I've stolen her, I'm afraid.
I glanced at her case today and was considering covering it and decided to park it for now. But yeah, so I'll take that one off my list. So I know some. I haven't done a deep dive into it, but yeah, I know some of the details. But I'm interested to hear your coverage.
Fabulous. Okay, so in May of 2002. Louise Tiffany was a 43-year-old mother of two. She lived with her two children, Sean, who was 18, and Hannah, who was 6, in a flat in Dean Village, which is an area of Edinburgh city centre. For anyone who's not been to Edinburgh, isn't familiar with it, Dean Village is such a lovely place, isn't it, Joanna? It's like a historic part of the city, and it's down...
It's near Stockbridge, isn't it?
Yes. Well, it's kind of, you can walk Stockbridge in a few minutes from there, but basically if you're going from the West End out towards kind of where I live, out of town, you have to cross over the Dean Bridge.
The bridge.
Exactly. And Dean Village is mostly underneath and off to the side, but there's some stunning, stunning properties. And so that's where she lived with her two children at the time. She left on the evening of the 27th of May in 2002, around midnight. She left the flat following a row with Sean, and she went missing. Louise left without her bank cards, any cash, any extra clothing or bags, and no ID or passport either. So the next day, she was reported missing by her family, and the police began a search almost immediately. I think partly that was due to the fact that she'd left behind her daughter. Sean was obviously an adult at that point, so he was less of a concern, but she wouldn't have left her daughter behind. That was kind of what everyone was really, really concerned about. They were, first of all, they were convinced that she might have fallen into the River of Leith. The water of Leith runs through Dean Village, and it would have been a minute's walk, if that. And because of the nature of the area, there are some kind of easily accessed paths where you could fall in pretty quickly. It's not a fast running body of water, but I'm very sure people have managed to pass away in it through unfortunate circumstances before. So they did a kind of foot search. They checked in various properties. They had missing people's posters and did appeals, but then they also engaged divers units as well, which I was a little surprised that they would even need divers units, honestly, for that body of water. But they basically pulled out all the stops. So they did that. And then they also had her daughter, Hannah, appear on the television with her aunt, Lulu, for an appeal to the public. So they were pleading for Louise to come home, and they didn't believe that she would have left of her own accord whatsoever. Relatives did, however, give police a reason that Louise might have been struggling at the time. Her son, Sean, so Sean Flynn is his full name, he was due in court the same week that she went missing. He was to stand trial for dangerous driving, and that was for a high-speed car accident, which was in the previous year, so in 2001, and that was in West Lothian, and it claimed the lives of his cousin and his best friend at the time. He had a brand new car, and they were at a petrol station, and he was trying to show off, essentially, kind of an all too familiar tale. Teenage boy gets a car that's maybe a little bit too fast for his needs. Others in the car with them wants to show off, and it's ended in a tragedy. So he was actually sentenced to 4 years for that offence. Did you know details of that as well?
A little bit, but...
Yeah, it's... So his mum was really... She was obviously angry at him. She was worried about it as well. And the fact that it was family members that had been involved. So it was his cousin as well and his best friend. And I think with any of those kind of things, it just has that ripple effect. You know, the butterfly effect goes out. So it just caused a lot of issues within the family and the kind of wider circle. Additionally, he had been having an affair with a woman, an older woman, and she was very dissatisfied with that and didn't approve of the relationship. And he felt that he was an adult and he could do what he wanted, essentially. So there was a lot of, issues in the household at that time. And apparently they were rowing a lot. There was neighbours in the building that said that they heard arguments fairly frequently. From a lot of the sources, Louise's life was said to have been somewhat troubled. So whilst they did say she could be witty, you know, family orientated, energetic, funny, she also had a lifelong struggle with her mental health, and she suffered from both depression and anorexia. So she'd had quite a tough time, and obviously she was a single mother at this point as well. And at that point she was not working. She reportedly had also struggled to manage her money and had spiralling debts, and she had actually told people that she'd considered turning to prostitution at one point to pay off the debt. So it sounds like she was going through a pretty rough time. Things were maybe quite turbulent, And, you know, when someone goes missing in those circumstances, it can actually be really difficult for the police to take it seriously. But thankfully, her family managed to convince them that this was not just a woman up and leaving her life. So once again, in the months leading up to her disappearance, the family were very clear to police that her relationship with Sean was deteriorating. And on the day that she vanished, he reportedly told his father that his mother was, quote, fucking up his life. So because of her life choices, he felt that they were impacting him, and he was not happy about it. And obviously his father was Louise's ex, so he had, you know, they weren't on the best of terms, but that was how he felt at the time. By the end of June in 2002, the police still hadn't found any sign of Louise anywhere. There weren't any sightings. And on a hunch, a detective had Sean Flynn's car checked for forensic evidence. They found blood in his Nissan Almera, and it was determined that the odds of 1 billion to 1 that the blood belonged to Louise. So this was obviously a massive turning point in the case, and it went from them searching for her as a missing person or someone that had possibly left of her own accord to either live out a different life or, unfortunately, you know, take her own life or something of those that ilk. They were now convinced that something much more sinister had happened. And I think the other things that we would take into account are that most women that are murdered or harmed, it is someone that knows them, unfortunately, especially if it is a male that does it. And additionally, it's often the last person that sees the person. So they had honed in on Sean, the fact that they'd been arguing, etc., etc. So they did all the standard checks for proof of life for Louise. As there was no body, they had to prove more or less that it was highly unlikely that she was still alive at this point and that she had been murdered. So Louise hadn't accessed her bank accounts, her buildings accounts, or she hadn't contacted social services, she hadn't contacted any government agencies, she hadn't been to the NHS for anything at all. So there was nothing that they could find that would prove that she had been alive at any point in time. She also hadn't contacted her daughter or her family. And for them, that was the most telling thing. Her family were adamant that she would never have left her beloved daughter, Hannah. Later on in the court case, that one of the court cases that happened, there was actually a lot of kind of dirt thrown at Louise that she was almost too dependent on her daughter, and that she was very, very attached to her, almost unhealthily, it was alleged. So it was especially bizarre to them that she would ever leave her.
Was her daughter not 6?
Yep.
Okay.
But that was how it was portrayed by various people that knew her and lawyers, which is sad, to be honest. I think this is one of the things that I always struggle with court cases, when people try and demean or, you know, make someone look bad when they're not around to defend themselves anymore. I just think, you know, there's a level. I think it's important for us to mention some of these things, because I think it adds value to the information. It gives you kind of a bit of a better background. And I'm always careful not to tell you that they're, you know, they light up a room and they're like the best person in the world, because no person is perfect and everyone has their strengths and their flaws. So I think it's fair to say if someone's had a troubled life, it's maybe relevant to what's happened. So they were very sure that she wouldn't have left her daughter alone. So the police's next move was they scoured CCTV, and footage was found from a city centre ATM, so a cash line, and that showed a car matching Sean's leaving Edinburgh, headed east out of the city at around 1:20 a.m. on that night and returning over an hour later. he had claimed he had not left the flat at that time. In February 2004, because there was legal precedent in no body murder cases, the police were actually able to arrest and charge Sean Flynn with the murder of his mother, despite them not having found Louise's body. Due to delays in the case, the trial eventually took place in February and March of 2005. There was more evidence presented at that time, including the fact that Sean's telephone records showed that he was outside of Edinburgh, east of the city, during that time when he claimed he was in the flat. And that paired with the evidence from the car being spotted on CCTV, and there was blood in his car that matched Louise. I believe it was in the boot. That's alluded to but not specified in the things that I found. Those were the main aspects that they used to charge him with the murder. The trial took place at Perth High Court, and after 22 days, the jury returned a not proven verdict. Sean spoke to the media after the result, and he said, quote, "I sure as hell didn't kill her. I didn't kill my mum. I just had an argument with her, like I said in court, and then she walked out. I want them all to know that this has all been a lot of nonsense." Which, I mean, I don't know what else you would really expect him to say, to be fair, but he was found not proven. June Tiffany, who was Louise's mum, she spoke on behalf of the family to the media, and she said that the verdict was not justice and that justice hadn't been done for Louise. She accused the jury of failing to use their common sense. So she said, quote, "This is not justice for Louise. She is dead and there's no doubt about that. Her name has been dragged through the mud by her own son and his father, but we know and they know the truth. Sean has robbed his sister of his mother and ruined our lives. The jury had all the facts. Where is the common sense?" End quote. So the defence QC, Francis McMenamin, who I don't know, I can't tell from their name what their gender is, but they painted Louise as a not great mother. They said that she seemed more like a, quote, "troubled, extravagant, volatile, impulsive, needy and very selfish person whose family and children are all there as mere crutches to help her get through every night and day," end quote.
Wow.
It's pretty damning, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's a murder victim.
Yeah.
Where's the compassion?
I know. Why, how are they allowed to say things like that in court?
And it's about someone that's been murdered. So say even if he had done that, would that have made it okay? Do you know what I mean? Say if he'd been found guilty at that point.
Yeah.
Would that QC's comment...
Would they go, "Sorry, scrub that"?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, well, she was really needy and selfish. Oh, okay then. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I get the feeling that it would have been... So if he was found guilty, that would have mitigated it somehow and maybe reduced the sentence because they portrayed that he was living with this person that was an absolute nightmare. I mean, I don't know. It just made me feel a bit sick reading that, to be honest. And the fact that the grandmother of Sean was willing to say that he just wrote off his mother because he found not proven, a lot of the documents are... I couldn't get hold of them for the actual testimony in court. But from the family's reactions, he just slated his mother, basically. But there was a scream. So someone else testified there was a scream heard that night. He claimed that was just a noise that she made when she was surprised sometimes. Neighbours heard arguing. He also claimed that wasn't right. I mean, he just... Yeah. So he painted it out that way, that she was a terrible mother. I mean, in my mind, she was that terrible. Why still live in there when you're 18? But anyway, that's me.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, for Louise's family, the case was found not proven. and her case went stagnant. And her family were left without answers until in 2017, a cyclist discovered human remains in some undergrowth off a road between Longniddry and Aberlady in East Lothian.
Oh God, that's near where my granny and granddad used to live.
Yeah, it's near Gosford House is where her remains were found. And they were actually found 8 metres from the road. But police did state that it was an area that was no longer, it hadn't been searched, sorry, before. So they wouldn't have found her there at that time. So, yeah, they were able to identify her by her dental records because of the time that had passed. Which, once again, I just think is so sad because immediately, as soon as she was found, the newspapers were on it and it was immediately, people were just speculating wildly that, you know, that it was Louise. Unfortunately, it did turn out to be her. But we've seen that with other cases as well, like with Alan Bryant Jr. being missing. Anyone that turns up in that locale, people tend to presume that that would be his remains that were found. But, and in this case, it was Louise. So that immediately opened up a reinvestigation of the case by Police Scotland. On the 9th of January 2020, the original trial verdict was set aside and it was confirmed that Sean Flynn would be retried for murder, and they added on attempting to defeat the ends of justice. So they had to submit a double jeopardy application on the basis of new evidence that was not available in 2005. So obviously that new evidence is her remains. There are only certain circumstances in which you can override the double jeopardy law in Scotland. And the main one that seems to happen is new evidence. And that's usually due to the passage of time, exactly like it is in this case. So on Friday, the 17th of January, 2020, he appeared at Edinburgh Sheriff Court to be charged. And he was subsequently released on bail. So at this point, Sean was living in Berlin in Germany. Due to the coronavirus pandemic, there were several delays in the trial. At the end of 2021, due to the travel restrictions, Sean's lawyer, QC Brian McConaughey, entered not guilty pleas on Sean's behalf as he was unable to attend court. The trial was set for October. Sean did not show up for the trial and a warrant was issued for his arrest. And that was an international warrant, so they were going to basically extradite him. Less than 48 hours later, a man was found deceased outside a 6-story apartment building in Peñíscola near Valencia in Spain. Sean Flynn, who was now 38 years old, had apparently thrown himself from an Airbnb apartment that he had rented.
Oh, Jesus.
Taking his own life.
Oh, bloody hell.
So Police Scotland and the Crown Prosecution Service are not seeking anyone else for the murder of Louise Tiffany. And it is widely presumed that he committed suicide to avoid coming back to court and possibly being sentenced and found guilty. So that is the case of Louise Tiffany, which I had actually considered covering when we started the podcast, but that was before they actually had done much with it. So I knew that they had obviously found her remains and that they wanted to retry him. But I wanted to wait and see what happened with the trial, and then the pandemic hit, so I've been kind of following it on and off. And then, super sadly, obviously, about a month ago, I saw that he had been found dead and that he had committed suicide. So he had gone there. He was with a woman in Spain, and he obviously knew that they were looking for him, that there wasn't a warrant out for his arrest. So he fled to Spain and spent a week there. His booking was for a week and he overstayed, and the Airbnb owner was concerned, and I believe that's when they found him. And they don't know what happened with the woman that was with him. She seems to have vanished. I think he gave kind of falsified details. They just thought he was a tourist. They just thought he was there on vacation.
That's so sad.
I know. It's a It's a bit deflating, isn't it?
Yeah. It just seems like an unnecessary loss of life.
Mm.
And then obviously there's no outcome now to her. You know, the retrial as well. Not retrial, I don't think. But is it classed as retrial under Scottish?
I think it is classed as a retrial, yeah.
Oh, because we now can because do double jeopardy.
Yeah, double jeopardy.
But yeah, it's just kind of sad for kind of everyone all round, isn't it?
Mm.
Really? It feels like there are no winners here. I mean, I guess there probably aren't really anyway in these kind of circumstances.
Yeah,
but
I think that's kind of where my brain is at. If I'm,
it feels like it would be a bit of an open wound.
Mm. He pled not guilty anyway.
Yeah.
So he obviously pled not guilty for the first trial and was found not proven, and then he pled not guilty and then obviously took his life before he could be tried again. So I highly doubt he would have changed his story or provided any extra information. It might have been a little bit different if, for example, her remains hadn't been found and you thought, oh, well, you know, at least he could tell them where she is. But thankfully, the family have been able to, you know, lay her to rest. And additionally, the police were able to tell people where her remains were found. And there was tributes laid and, you know, there's people go there and leave flowers, etc. So they do know what happened to her. They're not wondering where she is somewhere. In a very roundabout way, they already were convinced it was him.
Mm-hmm.
So is it, you know, would it have given them that much more closure? I don't know. It's not like he's gotten away, you know, it's not like he's been found not proven again or not guilty. And then he's outliving his life. He has, he's taken his own life. But I can't imagine that's the outcome they wanted either.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's one of those where obviously legally we cannot say that he did it, etc., etc. But it would appear that they had enough evidence that they believed that, on top of the previous evidence, with the evidence they had now, that he was very likely to have been found guilty. And I'm sure many people would argue the fact that he took his own life would suggest that he believed it was likely as well.
Yeah, or he just didn't want to go through the pain of another trial.
Perhaps, but then, yeah, I mean, I guess that's perhaps why he moved to Germany, because you would always have that hanging over you if you didn't do it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, so when you had read about it, what was it that struck you about the case? Was there anything that kind of stood out to you, or was it kind of a lot of the same things that I've been feeling? And
well, to be honest, I only had a sort of quick glance of the case, so I knew the kind of, and I looked at it as early as today, so it was kind of fresh in my mind. If you'd asked me next week, I probably would have been blank on it. I just looked at the highlights of it, and I parked it because I thought, there's too much involved there, you know. I just thought it was one I would look at later if I was going to pick it up. So, but yeah, it's just, yeah, I mean, I think there's arguments to be made that, you know, the fact that he was living in the country, committed suicide, you know, you could probably strongly argue that that indicated guilt.
Mm.
But then, you know, he spent some time in a young offenders institute. He had already been tried for the case, and he's been retried again. It could genuinely be that he was just like, I don't have the strength to go through this again.
Yeah, yeah. And especially, yeah, if you were innocent, yeah, if you were innocent.
If you, and especially if you'd already stood trial and you'd been found innocent and then you were being retried, you know, I can imagine that would take a significant toll on anyone.
I mean, to like, throw it out there, say for example he was going to court that week that his mother disappeared, and obviously he was found guilty that time, like you said, went to a young offenders institute. I think it was in Pullmont that he went to.
Yeah, Pullmont young offenders.
Yeah, and say that for example they had a fight, you don't know, maybe an accident, something happened, and he's panicked and gotten rid of her. It's irrelevant at that point anyway. You know, the fleeing the country and everything else. Yeah, I think you're right. I think, and unfortunately, having had the previous trial and having his past, that'll impact everything as well. So I do get it. And there is a point where you think, would you come back?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But I feel for her family. I really feel for absolutely. Her family.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It's, like I say, I imagine it would be one of those cases. It's just a bit of an open wound, you know, and it'll take a long time, if ever, for everybody else affected to heal from that.
Yeah.
So, as with most of the cases we cover, it's just very sad.
It is, and I think sometimes with these kind of ones, because there was the Rory Blackhall case as well that I covered, the one in Livingston where they believe that the man that killed himself took Rory's life, and yeah. It's got a similar feel to it. I still think they're important to cover, even though there's no distinct outcome. Mm-hmm. And additionally, there are cases out there where there is a supposed distinct outcome, and then you find out people have been erroneously convicted. So, you know, we were just kind of telling you the facts as they are, and you'll probably draw the same conclusions as us a lot of the time anyway.
Yeah, I think so.
Do you have something fun to cheer us up?
I do. I think I have something kind of funny to end our episode on. So basically, this was back in, I think, 2012. So this was a while ago. Apparently, a woman got drunk and stole a ferry, 45-foot ferry, after a two-day drinking binge. A woman, her name was Alison Whelan, taunted police by shouting, "I'm Jack Sparrow. I'm a pirate." Referring to, obviously, Johnny Depp's character from Pirates of the Caribbean. She was 51
sure
years
he
old.
He was on a ferry.
No, he wasn't on a ferry. She was 51 years old. She had got drunk on Lambrini and had ingested deadly nightshade. That's a legal high, isn't it?
I don't know. I thought it was a poison.
Deadly nightshade?
Yeah, I thought that was a poison. I thought it was like a Victorian poison. I mean, it's definitely going to do
gonna
something
it?
To you. Yeah.
Give it a Google.
Yeah, deadly nightshade. Honestly, see some of the things that I Google for this podcast.
I know. Hopefully, if you're ever arrested and police look at your search history.
I know. Okay, yes, it is. It's poisonous. So it is also known as Atropa belladonna, known commonly as belladonna or deadly nightshade. It is a poisonous perennial herbaceous plant in the nightshade family. Its distribution extends kind of everywhere. It's like Europe, North Africa, and Western Asia. And yeah, you can, let's see, usage, toxicity. One of the most toxic plants ever known. And its use by mouth increases risk in numerous clinical conditions. Yeah, so all parts of the plant are deadly. So yeah, you've got to be super careful. Berries pose the greatest danger to children because they look attractive and they taste sweet. And yeah, they can cause a whole bunch of stuff. So delirium, convulsions, hallucinations. Some of these are really bad, and then you've just got like constipation at the end. I'd be more concerned about the delirium and convulsions than I would be about the constipation, not gonna lie.
Definitely. So I don't know why she'd ingested it. Maybe some people think it's a cheap legal high or something. I don't know. Anyway, she'd apparently ingested it. So 30 police officers were called to deal with the incident. She'd boarded the 100-seat Dart Princess River Ferry with a friend in Dartmouth a year before. She'd undone the mooring ropes because, as she told police, she kept tripping over them. She added that she felt the boat moving and noticed the hotels getting a long way away. She'd apparently been, as I said, on a 40-hour drinking binge and had eaten deadly nightshade. Oh, there we go, a poisonous hallucinogenic. Before calling an ambulance, claiming to have had a seizure. On arrival, the paramedics found her drunk and rambling, with Whelan's friend Tristram Locke pushing one of the medics over.
Wow.
They then called the police, but saw the ferry drifting away from the shore. Eyewitnesses reported seeing the double-decker ferry drifting on the tide, smashing into other boats like a pinball machine. 30 police officers, the Coast Guard, a lifeboat crew, and additional paramedics were called to the scene. Whelan from Devon continued to taunt the police, yelling, "What are you going to do now?" and "I believe this is out of your jurisdiction." She was eventually arrested after an hour when the ferry came to halt in calmer waters, retorting, "We'd have ended up in Saint-Tropez if we hadn't been caught."
I love it.
Magistrates jailed the woman for 122 days for aggravated vehicle taking, which she had denied.
I have a feeling if you had to be in a situation like that, I could see you shouting, "This is out of your jurisdiction." Like, I could definitely see you shouting that 100%. 100%. Also, Macbeth of Scotland, he poisoned people with belladonna.
Really?
There you go. Yeah, it was a huge poison that was used, but it does say recreational drug. I just read down a little bit. However, it says the hallucinations are most commonly described as very unpleasant and recreational.
So it's not like a trip.
No, she was trying to go on a trip though. Yeah. She was trying to go to Saint-Tropez. I mean, it just sounds terrible. Also, sorry, if you're trying to get fucked up, you're not going to take that terrible poison thing and Lambrini, are you kidding me? Like, are you kidding me? Like, what are you doing, women? Like, how? No. Terrible choices all round.
I think it's probably telling that I'm a child of the 90s because when it said Deadly Nightshade, the first thing I thought of was the Gladiator Nightshade.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember her? She's a really attractive black woman with, like, yeah.
They were all beautiful, to be fair.
Yeah, really strong.
It was probably a sexual awakening for many people in the 90s.
Like, us included.
Yeah, what's your sexuality? The whole cast of Gladiators. They're all gorgeous.
There was an ugly one there.
No, it was a good show. I actually wanted to go on it when I was younger.
Absolutely. I was devastated because we used to live near Birmingham and it was obviously filmed at the National Indoor Arena. Mm-hmm. And we were like, maybe we'll get to go. And I think I remember my parents saying, "Oh yeah, it's not as exciting as it looks on telly. Like, you have to sit around for hours and hours and hours for all the events to take place. Like, it's not as fast paced as that." But
I bet there was so much drama as well. You know how, like, on Strictly, there's all the, like, people pairing up and, like, cheating on each other. There's going to be 100%.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
endorphins flying,
steroids,
testosterone swinging.
They've got tiny little lycra outfits. I mean,
yeah,
how they agreed to some of those outfits and things.
I know.
But yeah.
Could you imagine the guys in the change room, like, one leg up on the bench, like, just sort of, you know, with a crotch right there, like the sweaty crotch and the tiny little shorts?
I bet the change room was reeking. I bet you it was absolutely stinking.
Unpleasant.
That was some serious, like, strenuous workout they were doing.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Nice.
How did we get here again?
I don't know. You have been listening to Murder, She Spoke. As we say all the time, please do go and leave us a 5-star rating or review on your podcast platform of choice if you have enjoyed this episode. You can get in touch with us, as aforementioned, on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. You can also email us info@murdershespoke.net. Thank you so much for listening and we'll see you next week.